This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The days of Obamacare seem to be numbered.
They have to repeal the budget-busting bills like Obamacare.
Oppose the individual mandate. Oppose Obamacare.
To repeal Obamacare.
Obamacare was off the charts. Was wrong.
I don't like the Obamacare plan.
Repeal whatever is left of Obamacare.
Repeal every single word of Obamacare.
Why do you continue to support a Nazi policy as Obama has?
You know, Obamacare is really, I think, the worst thing that has happened in this nation since slavery.
Setting suns before they fall. Echo to you, that's all, that's all.
Remember all those nasty threats, those chants, long-standing threats from politicians and well-meaning Americans who have been dead set against what under President Obama became the law of the land back in 2010?
Today, health insurance reform becomes law in the United States of America.
Obamacare was confirmed in large part by the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2012.
The health care was for me. The health care was for every American family.
Yes, the Affordable Care Act will now become a footnote in the history of health care policy in America. Aside from the feeling we may have that this might not be the most efficient way to do things, enact the landmark piece of legislation and then unenact it, this is no longer an idle political threat, though. It's become the blueprint for another approach to health care and not a return to nothing at all, which was basically the case for 16% of Americans found to be uninsured back in 2009. Today, that number is 11%. 20 million Americans, according to the Department of Health and Human Services, have found insurance under what will soon be no longer the law of the land. Not all of them are happy or enthusiastic about Obamacare or the future without it.
My name is Dana Thielen. I live in Evanston, Illinois. I have benefited from the Affordable Care Act because I do not have employer-provided health insurance, along with many others in America. And so it is in my best interest that the Affordable Care Act is not cut. It would be fantastic if, as a registered nurse, the Affordable Care Act required my job to provide benefit options. Or benefits at all. I am seriously an uninsured registered nurse. How's that for irony? Katie, Little Rock, Arkansas.
My name is Julie, and I'm calling from Monk's Corner, South Carolina. I have no insurance, but I would have gotten Obamacare if it was just on my income. Instead, they combined it with my husband's higher income, making it not affordable to me because I didn't qualify for any subsidies, and it was over $800 a month. So I just did not go with Obamacare, and I do kind of hope they repeal it.
This is Abigail from McKinney, and the Affordable Care Act is working in my favor as I am a full-time student over 26 who has pre-existing conditions.
Lena on Twitter writes, I'm in the minority here, but all the marketplaces, et cetera, the exchanges she's referring to, are actually really easy and pain-free for me to use. Very happy with it all. Happy, worried, feeling ripped off, confused. Jonathan Gruber, he's an economics professor at MIT and one of the architects of Obamacare. I spoke with Jonathan and Renee Landers, law professor at Suffolk University and director of the healthcare law concentration at the school, about the Affordable Care Act and what it means for the future of healthcare. They joined us from our partner station WGBH in Boston to try to explain where we're headed.
I think we need to start with what Obamacare's accomplished, which is it's met its three primary goals. One was to cover uninsured Americans. More than 20 million Americans have gained coverage. The second was to fix a broken non-group insurance market where insurers can now no longer discriminate against the sick. And the third was to start to bend the cost curve. An employer insurance costs are about $3,600 below what they're projected to be. So Obamacare has met its goals substantively. Unfortunately, it's not met its goals politically. It's never really achieved the popularity or success that its supporters would have hoped, and it's been an uphill battle. So I think that we are facing a situation where Republicans are in a box. They're sort of like, as has been said before, they're kind of like the dog that caught the car. On the one hand, they've been saying for years they want to get rid of it. On the other hand, they recognize, really, that it's been very successful, and they don't have a replacement. And I think that's the situation we find ourselves in.
Renee, how would you put this?
So I would say that I would agree with what Jonathan just described as the substantive impact and also the problem with the politics of the situation. And I attribute some of that to the president and to other Democrats who have not been aggressive early on in really selling the benefits of the program and explaining to the American public what the benefits that it's provided to them. The other thing, though, I would say is that it's changed the public expectation about having health insurance, I think, forever. And that's one of the challenges for the Republicans in the repeal effort, because now the public, even though they would say they don't like some of the aspects of Obamacare in its details and the sort of flaws in some of the implementation, but now they do expect that health care will be available to them at an affordable price. And I really don't think it's possible to turn the clock back on that expectation now.
So, Jonathan, is it possible that Republicans will actually stumble ahead and get to a simplified single-payer system? Maybe they'll call it Health Market, you know, 2000, or Health Market 21st Century, and pretend that it's not, you know, socialism. And that's where we will be in 10 years.
No, it's not possible. If you look at the history of healthcare reform, every time we've tried to move forward in healthcare, we've always moved to the right. You know, every single 20 years we try to reform healthcare, it's been more conservative than the past. Republicans are not going to stumble on single payer.
With the caveat that every time we've done this, we've extended Medicare and Medicaid. So, yes, you're right. We've stumbled to the right, but we've also extended these lefty programs from the 60s.
Right. And right now, I don't think that's in the books. I think really it's about playing defense on those programs. I think, quite frankly, for supporters of covering the uninsured, for supporters of rational health policy in America, the best they can hope for is the closest possible approximation to Obamacare, that Republicans end up with something which is, you know, Trump care in name, but Obamacare in substance, because I don't think we can hope it's going to get better. Getting better would involve essentially just going against so many of their principles. I just don't see it happening.
Right. So I think that, you know, Hillary Clinton's approach during the campaign, which obviously she didn't communicate, was this incrementalist kind of approach that Jonathan was talking about, kind of tweaking the problem areas of Obamacare to try to improve them, you know, increasing the subsidies to people on the individual markets, on the exchanges, you know, trying to limit the out-of-pocket costs on, you know, prescription drugs and things like that. So her approach was that incremental, more conservative, one-step-at-a-time kind of approach, but obviously that did not resonate with the public.
What's the legacy here? They repeal Obamacare and there are going to be huge regrets. Emergency rooms will fill up with diabetics once again, and that's where we're going to be, back to square one? Or is there a real improvement that will take place within the political cycle? Jonathan?
I mean, the only thing we know is that we don't know. All we know is that Republicans have made a series of promises which are mutually inconsistent with not destroying everything Obamacare has accomplished. So if they want to try to keep the gains, if Renee's right, and I hope she is, that the standard has changed in America, look, nobody runs ads saying how awful it is, we have to have auto insurance. Okay? If people have come to believe about health insurance like auto insurance, like it's just something you have in America, then Republicans are going to have to break one of the promises they've made. They're either going to have to include some kind of mandatory enrollment mechanism, or have larger subsidies, or bail out the insurers. Something's going to have to happen. Otherwise, we are going to end up back with the broken system we had before Obamacare.
The other problem with repeal that we haven't really talked about, we've you know, correctly focused on the consumer, the patient population, but are the providers, the hospitals, the physicians, because in the former system, to some extent, any kind of charity care, uninsured care, you know, was financed by these hospitals and, you know, the physicians, you know, who provided free care with some subsidies. I'm oversimplifying here. And part of the deal in Obamacare was to cut out whatever the subsidies were in the system for those kinds of providers, on the understanding that more people would have insurance coverage through the Medicaid expansion or the participation of people in the exchanges. And if you eliminate all of it without restoring those payments to providers, it's actually going to harm the infrastructure of the healthcare system, not just make care less accessible for the population.
You know, call me crazy. This feels a little bit like, you know, if we're looking at legacy here, and that's sort of what we're talking about, that Obamacare is something like the Articles of Confederation for healthcare in America. It's frustrating, and it hasn't achieved its goals, and that it will eventually be replaced by a stronger, more centralized system, even if some people politically have to be dragged kicking and screaming to that eventual outcome. Renee?
Well, it is. I've always thought that the Affordable Care Act was one step in the process toward achieving goals of universal coverage and broader access to health care at more reasonable prices. And I think that the problem with politics in America is that the benefits are always oversold. And then when the reality doesn't match the promise, then people get very frustrated and discouraged. And the political system, as I alluded to earlier, doesn't have a lot of patience for, you know, trying to get it right. If you look at the history of the Medicare and Medicaid programs, they weren't perfect right out of the box. Every year, Congress passes thousands of pages of legislation tweaking both of those programs. And that's been the history because, you know, nothing is perfect. You have to see how it operates in reality, and then you can fix the problems as they occur. And that's what's happened over the evolution of Medicare and Medicaid over the years. And that's what needs to happen with the Affordable Care Act as well, if it's going to be successful and if we maintain some kind of commitment to its goals.
Final thoughts on this legacy question, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to call you crazy, but I'm going to call you aspirational. Basically, I think that it really comes down to the fundamental question Renee raised, which is, has the conversation changed in a way where Republicans are boxed in to not making things much worse? You know, if you'd asked me in October, what I always said was 2012 was the last election that mattered for Obamacare, that it was now the law and it could never go back. I don't know anymore. So I'd like to think that Renee's right and you're right and that this is the Articles of Confederation, we're moving forward. But I'm not as confident as you are because I think that we're just in a politically unprecedented era and we just don't know what's going to happen.
He's one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act, economics professor at MIT, Jonathan Gruber. Also with us, Renee Landers, professor of law at Suffolk University and director of the Health Law Concentration at Suffolk. Renee and Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.